Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The latest exhibit at the Alexander Hogue Gallery at the University of Tulsa probes our unusual simultaneous fascination and revulsion with disaster and how it's presented in our media. While we fear disaster in our own lives, we're oddly attracted to it in the lives of others. Witness the media's nonstop coverage of disasters, from tornadoes here in Oklahoma to hurricanes in the Gulf to earthquakes in the Pacific. They show it because we watch. Look at disaster films, from zombies and aliens today to skyscraper fires, ship sinkings, earthquakes, and airline disasters of the Irwin Allen era. We experience a dichotomy of both fear and desire about these events. My guest today, artist Christopher Lowther, explores this duality in his exhibit, New World Disorder, Disaster and Desire, currently on display at the Hogue Gallery. Lowther's work focuses on how film and other mass media intentionally or unintentionally communicate ambiguous statements about the human condition. In New World Disorder, he takes iconic imagery from those Irwin Allen era of disaster films to explore disaster's attractions. Lowther is an assistant professor of time-based media at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Christopher Lowther, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
In a lot of your work, from what I can see, you're really drawn to popular culture and the imagery of popular culture to create your work. In this particular work of New World Disorder, you sort of look at our perverse nature with disaster. In one sense, we're repelled and disturbed by disaster, and the other side of us, we're attracted by it. Almost, we cannot look away. Explain a little bit of the background behind New World Disorder.
Well, actually, what started the whole project is I was reading a blog, and I was reading this girl's post, and she was talking about how depressed she was. And she said, I think it was something along the lines that I'm so depressed that even a disaster, like there's something attractive about it. Like she was depressed, but there's something attractive to her about disaster. And I don't know where, psychologically, I don't know where that comes from, but it felt very right. Maybe like Misery Loves Company kind of thing. You know what I mean? I'm not sure, but I thought, wow, there's a kernel of absolute truth in that, you know, that I think there are a lot of people that feel this way.
When you think of any sort of disaster, be it an earthquake, a hurricane, even tornado coverage in our part of the country, television sort of looks at it as, there's a phrase in the industry, it's called scaring up cume, which means we're going to have more viewers if we scare you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be certainly a part of our contemporary media landscape, is mm-hmm. to exaggerate these storms or disasters, because inevitably we're going to watch.
Mm-hmm. And then the other aspect of the project that I realized is that it's tied into politics in a way, because disaster is about change. And so it also started taking on this, I started thinking about these ideas that, if we want change to come, like profound change, which a lot of people seem to want because things are going so badly right now in our society, that a disaster is almost attractive because it will upend things. It will disrupt things. It'll disrupt the way things are going and cause us to have to interact with one another or focus on something else that, bring us together. Disaster actually has the ability to bring people together that normally wouldn't come together. And that was one of the attractions of the famous Irwin Allen disaster films. And what I was attracted to, I think I say it in my artist statement, is that disaster has the ability to bring all these people who normally would not associate in our society. And when you think of, like, even recently, like, some of the disaster movies we've seen recently, I think it was Independence Day, but I remember the president's wife was helping this poor African-American woman, and they would never, or vice versa.
She was actually a stripper.
Yeah, but that would never...
It would never happen in real life.
Unless something like a disaster. So I started thinking about, is there something positive about disaster, and what does the metaphor of disaster mean, and politically, what kind of metaphors could we create out of this?
One of the things is, I was looking through your work, and you use the inspiration of the Irwin Allen disaster epics, like The Towering Inferno, some of the airport movies, The Poseidon Adventure, which was all in a specific little area from about 1970 to about 78 or 79. Mm-hmm.
There were four airport movies.
They made
four of those, and they kept going. So it was like Airport 72, Airport 75, Airport 70. But the rest of them were just...
But there was that whole era of the 70s when disaster films were sort of in vogue. And I'm wondering if there's a connection between, as you mentioned earlier, the political landscape. It was a time of great turmoil, disbelief in government, disbelief in really where we were. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting. In this, it was natural disasters or man-made disasters, but sort of natural disasters that could happen in real life. The disaster movies you were talking to in the last few years that have seemed to be, it's all about unnatural forces, zombies, alien invasion. And that seems to be the meme this time around, which I find there's some really interesting neural pathways in between some of these.
Mm-hmm. The political part was unexpected, but when I started thinking about it, it just made complete sense. And I was working with a film professor from IU, and I don't know if you had a chance to read her essay called We May Never Love This Way Again, Disaster and Desire, but that's one of the songs from one of the movies.
There's Poseidon Adventure, yes. Marie McGovern.
Song moment in those movies. And political, romance, it just all started. It's hard to untangle one thing from the other because then I started thinking about, well, it's also about the metaphorical language of disaster and how we use the language of disaster to talk about our own personal disasters. So love on the rocks, you know, our relationships up in the air, you know, all these, we're on shaky ground, you know, and when you talk about relationships, we're using this language of disaster. And I thought that was so interesting.
Earthquake, air disasters, burning buildings and ships sinking.
Mm-hmm. So one of the pictures is called That Sinking Feeling, and it's from Poseidon Adventure, and it's the ship's captain and one of the passengers, and they've got the waves behind them. But again, it's this idea that, you know, using this language of disaster to talk about our relationships with one another and how it mirrors natural disaster.
Now, were you a fan of these films in the 70s? Was that sort of formula to your growing up years or what exactly?
Yeah, I loved the disaster movies. To me, they were also like Love Boat. I loved the all-star cast. You know, they had all these, you know.
Cameos.
There's the second airport movie has Gloria Swanson in it, and it's hilarious, her character in that. Cause she's herself. She's Gloria Swanson, you know, great big diva in the film, always talking about herself. But I always enjoyed that as a kid, these all-star casts for some reason. I probably still to this day watch pre-1980 film more than I watch post-1980 film.
Why is that, do you suppose?
I think I'm a very nostalgic person, and I think that's another aspect of this project is nostalgia and my love of things past. Mm. I'm very nostalgic.
You know, at that point, this was when television was really taking a bite out of movies, so movies had to be bigger than life in some way. Certainly those disaster films were bigger than life.
Mm-hmm.
With, again, the all-star cast and everything. Do you think that's maybe a reason?
I'm not sure. And to be honest with you, I'm still processing this project and what it means. You know, exactly. Because I think it's just, there's so much to disaster. So I'm still detangling all of this and what it means to me. But I think part of where it comes from also is that I honestly think that it's possible that in my lifetime I could experience disaster. And so when I was thinking about using like friends and shooting friends, it's like it's a kind of catharsis because I'm anticipating what could happen and with these people and these people I have feelings for. So maybe by enacting these disasters, I'll be better prepared emotionally when it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about what's in the exhibit in New World Disorder, which is on display at the Alexander Ho Gallery through October 31st. In one end of the gallery, there are these still photographs, which look like they have almost created sets behind them, but it's almost like, I think you, off air, you said it was like, I'm trying to create the photo shoot version of the film with, you know, the stoic couple looking off in the distance or looking at each other and they're overcoming adversity. And so you've created these photographs, I assume, with friends or actors that sort of recreate these classic film using your invented sets. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that process?
Yeah, actually, the DVDs of the films that I've bought, they actually come with reproductions of the lobby cards. And I don't know if this generation today understands what lobby cards are, because I think it's kind of outdated at this point.
You know, it's something you'll walk by as you're going to the theater, or maybe there are a few lobby cards in some of the big multiplexes.
But not like there used to be.
Yeah, but it's a different genre now. Mm-hmm.
Actually, a few of the poses are direct references to the real lobby cards of those films. And I've just reinterpreted them very slightly, but they're just kind of standing in. It's just been kind of made personal, you know, with the people that I used. But it kind of confounds the experience of the lobby card. But again, I was just focusing on the moment that the disaster brings about this kind of romantic moment or interlude, either directly preceding or during or right after. But somehow the combination...
There's always time when the ship is sinking, when the plane is going down, there's still time for romance.
Yes, exactly. And the other thing that's interesting, when you look at these Irwin Allen films, some of the people are cheating on their spouse. So I start also thinking about, is disaster punishment? That's not new, right?
No.
I mean, supposedly Hurricane Katrina was to punish the gays down there, or I can't remember what it was, you know, there's some talk.
Yeah, the hedonistic nature of the city.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
And so I started thinking about that too, is this kind of religious connotation too, is that disastrous punishment, just like the flood, you know, in Noah, it was a kind of punishment, right? They were intermingling with species that weren't necessarily human, and so God wanted to put that to rest, so he brought the flood to get rid of all the...
Too much wickedness in the world, basically.
Yes,
yeah.
Too much wickedness. And so it was used to cleanse. So I start, and that has interesting political connotations too, especially...
Now that's not something you necessarily have explored in this show, but it sounds like this is where this project may be going down the road.
This is the first iteration of it. It's such a big project, it's hard to... I'm sure there are going to be many phases to it. But like Towering Inferno, I don't think it takes much imagination to think about 9/11, right?
Right,
and the buildings coming down. I think the set for Towering Inferno is probably it has the most kind of social commentary in it, I think, more than any piece in the show, because you've got Native American Indians praying at the base of this building that's about ready to fall down, and you've got businessmen ready to jump. There are businessmen crossing a scaffold with flames underneath, and you've got Native American Indians kind of running the furnace, which also references the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And so
now that actual set piece is not here.
There's an image of it in the show, and you can see those things.
And there are also three other set pieces that are in the show, and one is of
Airport,
which involves...
Some blimps.
It's a combination of Airport and the Hindenburg, I think.
Yeah, actually, that's part of the project. It's many disasters are colliding in one piece. So Poseidon Adventure is not just Poseidon Adventure. It also stands in for the Titanic.
Yeah.
And Airport could, you know, that has that 9/11 aspect because planes were used, but Towering Inferno is also about 9/11.
I love, by the way, on the Poseidon Adventure Titanic, I love the waves you've created. They're almost like, in one way, shark teeth, but they're almost like Belle Epoque images of waves. You know, it's really kind of interesting. It's very stylized.
And so I also started thinking about, again, disaster and socially and, you know, like Titanic. We know that they only had enough boats for first-class passengers. I think what's going on in our culture right now and all the things that we're talking about, I think it's very interesting that this idea of class and who gets saved, right? And the same with what we're going through with healthcare, who deserves to live the longest, who
deserves healthcare.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that the disaster project for me is also, I honestly think to some extent that if we're not careful, that we will be punished with disaster if we don't straighten up. So I didn't think I was that religious, but there's a part of me that wonders, you know, how this is all going to play out. Are we going to be punished for being so wicked? And what form is that going to take?
My guest today is Christopher Lowther. He's a mixed media artist and assistant professor of time-based media at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. And he also holds a concurrent position in the mechanical engineering there as well. His mixed media show, New World Disorder, Disaster and Desire, is on display at the University of Tulsa's Alexander Ho Gallery through October 31st. Well, it's interesting, we're in another one of those periods, although, as we were talking about earlier, this time it's not a naturally occurring disaster, if you will, it's supernatural disaster, whether it be vampires or zombies or aliens or whatever. I think it really has something to do with this sense of ease of being in the society. I think when a lot of things are changing, a lot of things are just unsettled, we take solace from the fact that, you know, there's these disasters and recovery, which is, of course, that's recovery and redemption, which is the theme of all disaster movies.
Yes, part of disaster is hope. You know, at the end of the movie, it's always a brighter day. It's not like everything just ends in those movies. People are usually saved. You know, and
there's always a bright sunrise at the end of the movie. Yeah.
It's, you know, so it also, you know, you also think about this kind of purging of wickedness or bad deeds, and what's left is good, you know, but it took that scrubbing, right, or that kind of cleansing of disaster to make it happen, because otherwise it wouldn't.
In the exhibit, there are these, I want to call them, they kind of remind me somewhat of like Joseph Cornell boxes, but they're basically a little screen with a very short clip. In fact, as I was looking at some of the clips, I'm going, this clip looks vaguely familiar, but I couldn't tell you what film it's from, but it's just sort of iconic looking. This is disaster. This is from a disaster movie. And you've put them in what looks to be like clock boxes or something. I'm not even sure what the structures are. They're these wooden boxes, beautifully created with, again, this little sort of repeating loop film where you would perhaps put the clock face. Explain these pieces.
The clocks are what are called OG clocks.
OG clocks. What are OG clocks? I'm not familiar with them.
I'm not sure. I think it's spelled O-G-E-E, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I think some people shorten it to just OG, if I'm not mistaken. Most of them are weight-driven clocks. So some of them, when I bought them, they still had the mechanics in them, and there'd be these huge, heavy things that are pulling down, making the mechanism work. So I took all that out, and so I didn't create these clocks.
No,
these
but they're beautifully, they're wooden. They've got, a lot of times they'll have little pedestals and little columns within it. And, you know, they're these stylized table clocks, really.
And so the titles of the clock pieces are called Running Out of Time. So it's Running Out of Time 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So they're all named the same, Running Out of Time. And there's a quintessential romantic clip or scene that loops from each one of the disaster films. So it's not necessarily about what disaster it comes from. It's just within the context that, like you were saying earlier, that, you know, in the midst of disaster, there's time for romance, right? And maybe even that romance is precipitating the disaster, right? The Towering Inferno one's interesting. You've got this tall phallic building burning, you know, and all this like craziness going on inside, you know, people cheating on each other and or having affairs with their secretaries and stuff like that.
Well, it's interesting that these scenes, though, you know, they're reminiscent of these disasters, but out of context, it's really hard to understand, okay, is this from a disaster movie? It kind of looks like it. And knowing the overall theme of the show, you would recognize that. But they're really sort of universal scenes of sort of, you know, a woman looking longingly at somebody, a couple together, and just they're very sort of generic scenes, really. Mm-hmm. Was that purposeful?
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of just general idea about desire and disaster. So, you know, it's the second half of the title of the show is Disaster and Desire. And it's, like I say in my artist statement, it's twofold. It's how is desire represented in disaster film, and that's where those clips come in. But it's also a wish for disaster, which I think is, I don't know how people take that or process that statement. You know, why would somebody wish for disaster? You know, but I think when you get to a place in society where all the interventions or things that people have tried to bring about change and change doesn't come, it becomes like well, maybe disaster will bring about this change. Yeah. So, and it's a kind of controversial thing, I think, to say.
I think what you're saying, yeah, we wish for disaster. That's abhorrent on its face of it. But when you think of our media environment today, mm-hmm. where, you know, voyeurism is sort of the new norm. You know, you're watching people ostensibly in reality shows in their private moments, although those people know that they're going to be public moments. What is private? What is, you know, what is entertainment anymore? I mean, coverage of a disaster becomes entertainment a lot of times.
I don't watch cable. I watch movies, like old movies, but I don't watch cable. And I get all my news.
That's probably smart.
From the internet. And I was at one of the professors here at Tulsa at his house, and he had CNN on TV. And I can't even remember the last time I saw CNN. And I really started getting anxious because they just kept repeating over and over and over again all these bad things, you know, like the government shutting down, and they're talking about like what could happen, and you got the ticker tape along the bottom with all this terrible stuff happening. It's creating this environment where it's almost like you can't look away. I think as a person who's been deprogrammed, I think someone said it takes like a year of not watching television to deprogram yourself from that. So I think when I watch CNN, I see it slightly different than maybe people who are used to watching news all the time. I can see the kind of effect that it has on me, and it makes me anxious. And then I would think that after a while, it gets to the point where you can't look away. You want to keep watching, right? It's up to date, and they're going to show you all the carnage. And, you know, I'm not sure exactly psychologically where that's coming from. I still haven't come to an answer about that, where this perverse pleasure comes from.
Is that something you're going to continue to explore with some of these pieces?
Yeah, I am.
How long typically do you stick with sort of a thematic element? I know you used to do a couple of years where you were doing these scenes from cowboy movies and these sort of close-up looks that were sexually ambiguous, if you will, and you made a piece out of that, and you've done some other projects like that using popular media. How long do you think you'll stay with this till you have a better understanding of it? Is it your way of understanding it by creating these art pieces?
You have to realize I probably have a movie going on in my house in the background. If I'm awake, there's a movie going on in the background, and probably an older movie. And I think it gets back to this nostalgia again. And growing up with TV, my dad instilled this love of film in me. And it's how I interpret and understand the world. And I know that sounds a little messed up, like, you know, I mean, you're understanding the world by media instead of, you know, real experience.
Right, which is a distorted message anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so, but be that as it may, this is how I process and understand the world, is through film. And I'll watch a film, and almost every single time I see something different or new or another layer of meaning. So the answer is, I use media and my work to understand myself and to understand the world I live in.
But it sounds like from what you were saying earlier that this is, you're pretty much the beginning of this process, because you're finding new things that you're understanding about this idea of disaster films and how we relate to them and how we're repelled and attracted at the same time. So this is something you'll continue to explore for the next year or a couple of years or till you have a better understanding of it, or what exactly?
It'll probably take a little bit of a back burner because I've already decided what the next four projects I'm working on. I usually have more ideas than I have time or resources. So, you know, I'm planning on doing a piece called Gaslight based on the
Gaslight film. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I don't know if people realize this, but gaslighting is a psychological terminology. If you're being gaslit, that means that someone is psychologically abusing you. So, you know, in the movie that she's being told that she can't trust her senses.
Right.
And I see parallels with that within society. And are we being gaslit to some extent? So, again, it's how I understand things. I use film as a starting point to understand these things. I'm going to do a piece called High Rise Rear Window, which combines a piece of sci-fi literature. It's by Ballard, named High Rise. And then
Hitchcock.
The Hitchcock movie, Rear Window.
Well, that, but that could, you know, that seems to have an awful lot of resonance because, you know, Rear Window is basically this guy who's stuck in with a broken leg, stuck in his apartment, and he's seeing the world around him and really spying on the rest of the world. And that just seems to be a huge theme in popular media today.
Well,
you know, everything from people's snapping surreptitious video or photographs of things happening around them to reality television and all its incarnations.
I find reality television disturbing. I did as soon as it came out because I think George Orwell would be horrified to think that we're being conditioned to accept surveillance. That it's almost like the generation that's growing up right now, they can't imagine not being on video or constantly on Facebook and constantly providing updates so you know exactly what's going on with them. It's like they don't want privacy. And that's kind of scary to me.
That's a big shift, yeah.
Yes, that people are that okay with having their most private moments filmed and broadcast to everyone. You know, to me that's very disturbing. And I think reality television and packaging as entertainment, we just kind of buy it, you know, we just kind of buy into it.
And of course that's the reality of reality television is it is entertainment and it's not a real reality.
And it's not, and that's the other thing that's troubling is it's called reality, but it's mediated reality. And the moment that you bring a camera into that, you've already affected the outcome or the environment or whatever it is you're videotaping. So it's almost like you can't really record reality. It's not possible. Right?
Well, we wish you great success with New World Disorder, Disaster and Desire, which is on display through October 31st. I have to ask you about your position. I've never heard of this position before, the assistant professor of time-based media. What do we mean by time-based media?
When I arrived at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, they didn't have a new media area. Mm-hmm. And my thinking was, new media can only be new media for so long.
And then it's old media.
Right. Just like modern art isn't modern art, right? So I thought, I was trying to look ahead. So instead of calling it new media, which I thought was starting to sound stale, I thought time-based media.
All right. And they let you call yourself that.
Yeah, it might have caused me a little problems because I think sometimes people hear it and they're like, time-based media, and it's like new media. And they're like, oh, okay. And so, but that was my reasoning behind that.
Well, thanks very much for joining us, Chris.
Thank you.
Artist Christopher Lowther speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His new exhibit, New World Disorder, Disaster and Desire, continues on display at the Alexander Hogue Gallery through the end of October. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.